The following podcast is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network.
The National University MFA program is a fully online creative writing program with no residency requirement.
Genre fiction-friendly horror, sci-fi, fantasy, young adult.
Work with horror sci-fi faculty like Lee Thomas and John Coy.
Focus in fiction, creative nonfiction, poetry, or screenwriting. All screenwriting faculty, active Hollywood professionals.
Since 2005, the National University Online MFA program has helped working adults learn the craft of creative writing. Join the alumni network of over 1,000 graduates.
Get the idea in your head on the page. National University is an accredited, not-for-profit university. Explore more at www.nu.edu.
Thank you for coming to the Project Entertainment Network store. Please place your order. A good choice. A t-shirt for the horror show with Brian Keene. A Manta Method coffee mug. There's more. A Necrocast Icon hoodie. That's sharp. But why on earth would you want Bizong leggings? Wait, are you Mr. Frank? The Project Entertainment Network store, stacked with goodies from all your favorite podcasts. T-shirts, hoodies, mugs and more.
www.projectentertainmentnetwork.com.
Gentlemen, welcome to episode 98 of Three Guys with Beards. I am Christopher Golden. With me today are the ever-dashing James A. Moore and the sexy, 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 we just had this conversation, Thomas Snagoski. Hi, guys.
Hey.
How are ya?
How are ya? You know, Jim, I don't know, have you talked on the show? We talked on something else, but we talked on the show about what happens post episode 100?
That has not been formally announced, but now is as good a time as any.
All right. Well, it is episode 98. Episode 100 will see a shift in Three Guys with Beards. It is a shift a long time in coming, and hopefully will make Jim Moore's life much easier.
Once upon a time, I had two co-hosts who had the time to do this show. And well, then suddenly, I didn't. And I'm not complaining about it. I think it's a good thing. Those guys are a little bit busier these days. And so there will be some new beards coming in. Last week you saw or heard Bracken McLeod. This week you hear Tom Snagoski. Those are the two new regular beards with me.
Yeah, so
now, Chris and Jonathan aren't going away. They will be placed in the emergency backup beard drawer for when those guys can't make it or I can't make it.
That's going to have to be a really big drawer to fit me and Jonathan.
It's actually bigger than you think because it's also got to fit your egos.
Oh, there you go. Wow. It's a Tesseract.
Yeah, basically.
So, and I also think, Jim, that maybe I'll finally get a chance to do some of those one-on-one interview episodes that I've been wanting to do and just, like, randomly throw them at you.
I mean, maybe. Maybe we won't want your interviews.
Maybe you won't. Wow. That's
of course, we'll take them.
So Jim and Tom and Bracken will be the regular lineup of three guys. But, while Tom and Bracken are more reliable than Jonathan and myself, presumably once in a while, one of you three will need a sub. So.
Well, I mean, Tom's been known to go to sleep while talking, so.
He's sleeping now.
What was that?
Tom, listen, I want to come back to a conversation you and I had. I have a bunch of topics for us to discuss. You guys may also have topics, and we do have some questions from listeners, but I want to go back to the topic because somebody actually asked this question. I'll have to look it up on Facebook. Somebody asked the question, as to whether or not you'd ever consider doing voiceovers for cartoons. And this is not somebody, I don't think, who's like, you know, a regular. I'm looking it up right now. You know, I've said this for years. I don't think this question was asked by somebody who has heard me saying this for years. Oh, it's Randy Nilica.
Okay.
And Randy says, has Thomas Nagoski ever considered being or been approached to be a cartoon voiceover artist? And it must just be from listening to you appearing on this show that he's saying.
And I don't think I've done any voices on the show, so that's kind of scary.
Or it might have been, he's been at a couple of events. It might have been that, too. So,
maybe.
So it comes back to Jim, Tom and I were talking about the fact that the other day I watched Rio Bravo. Which is widely considered to be one of the great westerns of all time. Tom and I disagree a little bit about that, but it stars John Wayne, Dean Martin, Angie Dickinson. God, who's the kid? I can't think of his name. Anyway.
Maria Velasquez?
No. anyway, and it stars the great Walter Brennan. And if you don't know, listening to this show, who Walter Brennan was, Tom, can you give us a sample?
Do you want me to do my Jersey Wales one?
Yeah.
Well, looks like it's the Jersey Wales. look him in the eye. He's got the look of the rattler.
Oh, my God.
So I had told Tom that he should do this entire show as Walter Brennan, but he rejected that suggestion.
It's very tiring.
It's exhausting. Sure. You have to put everything into it. I just thought it was funny because when I saw that question posted today, it was so timely.
That is a weird question.
Yeah. Although, you know, again, listening to you do that voice, it's better than Brian Keene doing his Patsy Walker Hellcat impression.
Oh, that's got to be a horrifying thing.
It's not as good as Rio Yours, Jimmy Stewart.
All right, now that you've said that, every single person, the five people who listen to Three Guys with Beards, please, if you listen to this show, tweet at Rio Ewers and ask him to post a video of himself doing his Jimmy Stewart impression. I'm not kidding. Ask him to post a video. I'm sure he will. And then the world can decide whether or not Rio's Jimmy Stewart impression it passes muster.
I don't think there's anybody that does it better.
He's getting better. Let's be honest. He is getting better at it.
Or we're just getting immune to it.
Yeah, that's why he does it 700 times. Eventually he'll replace your memory of Jimmy Stewart doing it, and all of a sudden you'll be like, yes, Jimmy Stewart sounds just like Rio Ewers.
Or, Jimmy Stewart sounds like crap. Give me Rio Ewers.
Oh,
Rio,
my God.
Beat on you because we love you. And because your impersonation isn't that good.
I don't know that my wife Connie has ever cried with amusement at someone's self-delusion more than she did. All right, we'll stop picking on Rio. Oh, my God. All right, listen, Jim, the super most important question for you today is, have you yet seen Godzilla?
I have not.
Oh.
That said, do not hesitate to talk about it. I don't do spoilers. Don't affect me.
Well, we are going to talk about it, and the good news is that the plot is not really necessary. So we can discuss all of our feelings
crap
about
out of each other. That's all the plot you need, really.
But I mean, the thing is, like, we can discuss everything we liked about the movie without mentioning the plot because the plot really is not necessary.
Well, and the plot. I mean, people have been crapping all over the plot, but in all reality, it is what it is. I mean, these movies have these kind of crazy plots.
It's a Godzilla movie. What kind of plot are you expecting, you idiots?
Right.
Well, look, and people keep reviewing the thing going, there wasn't enough of the human characters, and we needed to see their... I'm like, have you ever seen a Godzilla movie? I mean, I grew up, you know, we were all weaned on these things, and... Yep. My kids were weaned on them. I call that good parenting.
Yes.
My son Nick did have a few issues with it, but he takes everything a little bit more seriously than he should, as befits someone who is entering the political realm. However, Daniel and I walked out of it, and those of you who listen to this show will recall Daniel once guest hosted with us. Daniel and I were so happy. Yep. We were just grinning like idiots walking out of that movie when they over the crawl at the end of the credits, they played the Mothra theme song. Yep. That made me very happy. But as I said to you, Tom, Jim, there's a thing, and I'm just telling you what it is right now. One of the background things is how Godzilla gets from place to place so quickly.
Yeah.
And there have been theories before that Godzilla gets from place to place so quickly because the Hollow Earth theory is true, and there must be, like, underground, like, caverns and tunnels that he knows how to travel from one place to another. And they end up discovering that, and it's a very short piece, but they end up in the Hollow Earth. Not the center of the world, obviously, but they end up in these, like, caverns. And there's more to it, which I don't want to spoil for you, Jim, but that whole section of the movie, I was so happy. Like, I don't need it. Like, people who go see the Fast and the Fucking Furious movies complain that this movie doesn't have enough, like, you know, exposition. Come on.
That's, you know, at least the monsters don't have any behind-the-scenes drama with each other.
Well,
as far as you know.
It's a little bit.
Yeah.
They normally keep their shit out front for everybody. The actors in The Fast and the Furious, not so much.
No. I heard Rodan was very difficult on set and wouldn't leave his trailer.
Well, I mean, that's Rodan, though. He's kind of a douche and always has been. If we're going to be honest about these things, he's just a hater.
All right, well, what else? What have you guys been reading and watching lately?
I've just been watching, like, kind of cheesy monster movies that I never saw. The other night I watched something called Curse of the Faceless Man, which was kind of a mummy movie without a mummy. It was a victim of the volcano Vesuvius, you know, covered in, a character covered in solidified ash. Cool. Yeah, it was you know what? It was goofy. It was 67 minutes, which is perfect for my attention span these days. Richard Anderson from $6 Million Man was one of the stars. That was a lot of fun.
Richard Anderson got high billing on that?
Yeah. He was, I believe he was like the star.
Wow.
Like, the star. Yeah, I know.
That one brief moment, shining moment in his life, he starred.
He might've had a couple more.
I think the title refers to his career, though. the Curse of the Faceless Man.
And honestly, you're kind of right, because he is that guy.
Right,
you know?
He's a character actor who appeared basically he played the same character on TV and in film for his whole career.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm the professor on Gilligan's Island. The man did several movies. Nobody can remember them.
Yeah, what's funny is, I don't think he did anything, I don't remember him in anything after Gilligan's Island. He did things when he was young. You're old. Wasn't he on that Dobie Gillis show?
I think so.
He might have been.
Is that any different than being on Gilligan's Island?
Yeah, I remember watching Gilligan's Island. Dobie Gillis was before my time.
Like Russell something or something or other.
Yeah,
that's right. Russell.
You know what I think? I believe that Richard Anderson played the Strangler in the Night Strangler movie.
I'm pretty sure you're right about that.
You are right.
Yeah. That was kind of cool.
Yep. You are right.
So there's a claim to fame.
Yeah, there you go. I know.
The actor you're talking about who played the professor on Gilligan's Island, and I guess the professor had a name, which I just learned. His name was Russell Johnson.
Okay, yep. That sounds right.
And let's see here. He was in several Twilight Zone episodes. Let's see. This is interesting. Oh, he made a lot of movies that he was in, you know, he had small roles in. Most of them sort of noir movies. He was in the 1957 classic Attack of the Crab Monsters.
Oh, there you go.
I think I saw that.
Which
I'm pretty sure I saw it.
Should see.
And it followed the Attack of the Crab Monsters. Wow.
Interesting.
He provides... As my beloved wife will point out, if it's a crappy horror movie, I've probably seen it.
He provides one of the voices in the English language version of Nausicaa, the Valley of the Wind.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, that was one of his last roles.
Huh.
Yeah, boy, his career was an interesting one. Yeah. Just like very strange things. But obviously Gilligan's Island was his
claim to fame. Deal.
All right, so can either of you tell me, without referring to Google, because I didn't know the professor actually had a name.
No, I didn't know either.
No, I know he has a name, but I couldn't tell you what it is.
Yeah.
His name was Roy Hinckley.
Really?
Professor Roy Hinckley.
Never knew that. So see, folks, listen to Three Guys with Beards, and you come away with knowledge you never imagined.
I wonder if that was something that was ever mentioned on the show.
I think it was, yeah.
Wow.
Probably they went through the list of missing people and mentioned it once or twice.
Yep. Yeah, fascinating to me. But, you know, that's what it is. All right, so what else? We just went off on quite a tangent. I have a lot of things I've been watching and listening to lately. So what about you guys before I get to my list that I want you to talk about?
Reading-wise, I've actually been reading all of the Miles Morales Spider-Mans.
Oh, okay.
The Bendis? Which I had not read before, and they're really good.
Yeah, the Bendis stuff is great.
And, you know, Bendis is hit or miss with me, but he definitely knocked this one out of the park.
Yep. Yep, he did a really good job.
Now, I have not read past Bendis writing it now that, Saladin Ahmet has taken
over?
Yeah,
yeah.
Have you guys read those? Are they good?
I have read them.
And then
how about them Red Sox?
Wow. Well, listen, you have to admit, Bendis is a tough act to follow.
Very tough act to
Bendis
follow.
Bendis makes everything seem so natural.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that's what I think he's best at, is that quality. Feel free to jump in with other things, but I'm just going to start going off on stuff. I recently read, talking about reading, just a couple things to mention. I read a novel called Boomtown by a fellow named James A. Moore.
Hack.
He is a hack.
Yeah. And
speaking of a hack, I also read the second Atomic Frenchie book by Tom Sigarsky. I did not read those in preparation for this episode because I didn't know Jonathan was not going to be able to join us. But I quite enjoyed them both. And it was very funny because they're both really fun in completely opposite ways.
Talk about opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yes, but they're both really fun. Like Boomtown is fun in a way that makes you like not want to sit next to Jim anywhere.
that seems fair.
Because you worry that you'll get dirty or bloody or both. Because he's clearly a sadistic son of a bitch.
Now and then characters have to suffer, sir.
Yeah. But you both need straitjackets. There's no question about that. The other thing, I'm currently reading the second volume of the complete Tomb of Dracula collection.
Oh, you're rereading that?
Yes. Well, Marvel's been publishing the trade paperbacks.
Right.
So the second one has been on my shelf for a while, so I'm reading that. And I'm also, for Defenders Dialogue, Brian and I finished up the Defenders last week. So this coming week, we're going to be doing the Gargoyle miniseries by J.M. DeMatteis, and Mark Badger was the artist.
Yes.
And
Bernie writes and covers.
Actually, Tom, I checked. It was actually only the first one was Bernie.
Only the first one has the Bernie cover? Okay.
But I have to say, like, this miniseries is so good and so completely different from anything else they were doing at the time.
Yeah,
And it stands completely by itself. There's no, at least in the first three issues, other than mentioning his previous, relationship with the Defenders.
Right.
It's completely separate from anything else in the Marvel Universe.
It was almost as if they were trying to set him up in his own little corner.
Yeah. It's really good. And it's something that I wish somebody would, you know, actually seriously follow up on, but.
I had never actually seen the Bernie Wrightson cover, and I'm looking at it right now, and damn, that's beautiful.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, Jim, if you haven't read those issues, I'll loan them to you.
Yeah, please, because I have not.
Yeah, it's so good, but...
Chris, here's a question for you. You said you're rereading the Tomb of Draculas.
Yep.
How do they hold up?
So it's interesting. I've been thinking about that a lot. I think that because of where I am in the reread, which is still only in the 20s, it's not holding up the way I wish it would. The art, of course, holds up amazingly. All of that beautiful Gene Colan artwork holds up amazingly. And Dracula himself holds up as a character. And in fact, I would say that, you know, like Frank Drake and Rachel Van Helsing and Blade, all these sort of main characters hold up. It's that the plots, you know, Marv's plots and his tendency to over-explain so much, which was common then.
Yeah, so the 70s, yeah.
You know, they're a little overwrought. I'm currently reading the Dr. Sun issues.
Okay, that's a riot.
Yeah. Dr. Sun, for those of you who don't know, is just a brain in a glass box. and that stuff, it reminds me of early Master of Kung Fu, you know. It's so the thing is that there's a lot to like about it. You know, there's an issue where Dracula and Rachel Van Helsing are in the midst of a blizzard in the Transylvanian Alps, and have to rely on each other to stay alive. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, you know? I remember that one.
But it's as it gets later in the series, if I recall, we'll revisit this, because I think as it gets later in the series, when it becomes much more about Dracula and more about evil and all of that stuff, that I remember liking it much better then. I mean, again, it's still my favorite horror comic of all time, but these particular issues don't hold up as well as I hoped.
Okay.
Well, you've got the entire series as a scope, and then you've got individual titles, and the individuals almost never hold up as well.
Right. Yeah.
And I mean that. The exception being the Wrightson and Wine Swamp Things, because Sweet Baby Jesus.
Yeah, those are great.
Yeah.
I've reread those 100 times, and they're still amazing.
Well, so as far as things I've been watching, so many things that I just have to soak. Like, I watched this film on Netflix the other night called The Perfection, which I posted about, which is so friggin' weird.
Was Walter Brennan in that?
No, he's not, but he probably should have been. unfortunately, the male character is played by Steven Weber, of Wings fame.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's really, you know, he fills the role fine. But there's not a lot of nuance in what he's doing in the role. But the rest of the movie, I think, is terrific. It's completely batshit crazy. But I do recommend it. I watched the Deadwood movie, which...
I haven't seen that yet. I really want to.
Well, this is what I have to say. If you are a fan of Deadwood, you will love the movie. And you will be so happy that they finally gave us a satisfactory ending. If you've never seen Deadwood... Don't even attempt to watch the movie.
And there we go. I was wondering about that.
No, it is not for you. You need to go back and watch Deadwood, because there are so many characters introduced so quickly in, you know, a two-hour movie. You know, I mean, it's like there's no way that it will mean anything to you if you haven't seen Deadwood.
See, and that makes perfect sense to me.
And then a couple of other quick things. I think, I don't know if I mentioned Dead to Me on this show. Dead to Me is terrific. Did you guys watch the pilot of Nosferatu yet?
I did.
No, I meant to, and I missed it.
Well, it's still there on demand, Jim.
I'd say I'll have to fix that immediately.
See, I haven't been on this show in weeks, so I'm talking about all the things that I've watched in that time.
Yeah, it was great. I enjoyed it.
I thought it was... Not only is it a really effective hour of television, it's a really faithful adaptation.
Yeah,
which I think, honestly, when you've achieved a certain level of success, you can get that kind of faithful adaptation.
Actually, you're right. Yeah,
it helps.
So kudos, helps. To Joe, on that. Yeah, exactly. And then I posted also today. I watched Killing Eve, and there's a series on Amazon Prime Video called Fleabag, both shows created by Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who stars in Fleabag. And Connie and I have been watching Fleabag. It is, it's funny, it's sad, it's so bracing, I guess is a good word for it. The character is constantly breaking the fourth wall in the best use of breaking the fourth wall I've ever seen. I just think it's brilliant. And then the last thing I want to mention, Jim, is available right now on Amazon Prime Video, not to promote people buying things on Amazon, but it's the only way you can get this, is a film that was called The Unseen when it was released in the UK, but is now called Amaurosis in the US, which I think is a poor choice.
I'm not going to argue with you on that.
Change the title to something that no one will remember. So it's called The Unseen in the UK, and it stars our friend Jasmine Hyde.
And that is now available.
Yeah, it's available in the US as Amaurosis, Amaurosis. Again, if I have to spell the title for you, it's probably not the right choice of titles.
Yeah.
But it's good. That's a proper horror movie, right?
No. I would call it a thriller. It's a suspense film and a drama about a couple who are dealing with the loss of their child in a very tragic way, neither of them is both of them are showing signs of maybe not holding it together very well, and it becomes quite a suspenseful film. But it's very good, and Jasmine is incredible in it. She's so affecting.
I do not doubt at all. Yeah. I have to catch that.
So I've talked a lot, but that's because I had a long list. Like, there's so many things that I wanted to share.
Chris, let me interrupt you for a second.
Yeah, I'm done.
The woman who stars and wrote Fleabag and wrote Killing Eve, I believe, is actually doing work on the new James Bond script.
She is. Phoebe Waller-Bridge is doing a... she's hesitant to call it a rewrite. I've read several interviews with her. She's calling it a polish.
Okay.
But my understanding of the situation is that Daniel Craig became such a fan of her work and is so aware of the reputation of Bond and apparently thought that the script still needed some work, that he was the one who asked the producers to bring her in for a final rewrite and polish.
Kind of says a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, and again, she writes these female characters who are, you can't find more fully formed, you know, I mean, they're just like, they're great characters. Yeah, so I can't wait to see. She basically, I was reading this interview where Phoebe Waller-Bridge said she wants the actresses who are in the James Bond film, and she names them. I can't remember at the moment. I just glanced at it. But I saw this quote where she said, you know, she wants them to get the script and to read their parts and feel like they can't wait to play that role.
What a lovely concept. Seriously.
You know? So I'm super excited. And again, like, Killing Eve has shown her talent for suspense and thrillers and twisted, you know, characters.
Yeah.
All very interesting. You guys have any topics you want to discuss?
I've noticed that Trump is out of the country. Is there any way we can keep him out of the country?
Well, I got to tell you, I did see a sign that said, hey, USA, change the locks and revoke his passport while we distract him.
I shared that on Facebook because, I would love that.
So, let's not talk about him.
Hey, how about this news about Vertigo going away?
Oh, man.
What's up with that?
I have no idea. I haven't heard it 100% confirmed, but it's kind of sad.
It is. I've seen a number of different reports about it. All of them seeming to indicate that at least the imprint is going to go away.
Okay.
But let's look at this from the point of view of the business cycle, you guys. You know.
Yes. I mean, yes.
They've tried and they got rid of Karen Berger, then they got rid of Shelley Bond. You know, they've continued to sort of dilute the brand over time. And again, that's not to say I haven't read most of the relaunched books, which is symptomatic, I think, in the last, you know, 5 years or whatever that they've done.
Right.
And when they originally changed the rules about them being creator-owned books, and Warner Brothers finally said, wait, let's not do this anymore.
Yeah.
So they kept diluting the brand to the point where it didn't have the power it once had. So now I guess what they're going to do is they're going to take some of, this is what I've heard, they're going to take some of the existing projects, move them over to Black Label or whatever else they have there, I feel like eventually we will see Vertigo come back. You know?
Yes, I hope so.
Look, anything of value is going to come back. The Vertigo brand has value. They just, my suspicion is they'll rest it for 6 or 7 years, you know, and then they'll relaunch.
Yeah, because they'll come back with a battle plan, a better battle plan.
Right. Right. Or maybe it won't be a better battle plan, but that's they true. Will come that, back yeah. and yeah. try to get some mileage out of using the brand name. And that's not a cynical comment on Warner Brothers. That's just a comment on business, period.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, you know, comics shifts all the bloody time, guys.
Yeah. It's not just comics. I mean, you see, you know, there's an Angry Birds 2 coming out.
Thank God for that, because there were so many unanswered questions.
Well, my point is that anything of value, anything that anybody perceives that has value that they have the rights to or whatever, they're going to try to make a buck on it. So, you know, I think that... You know, it seems to me like whatever their feeling is about Vertigo right now, someone else will be in charge 5 years from now and they'll say, you know, we should relaunch Vertigo.
It'll be a nostalgia thing. The guy, the person who suggests it will be somebody who read the Vertigo books and like, right. Hey, you know what we should do? We'll bring back Vertigo.
Well, let's take it one step further. I mean, you want to talk about a really, really stupid move?
What?
Did you hear today that Warner has already canceled Swamp Thing?
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I heard that. I understand it's they've got 10 episodes done. It was going to be 12, and they brought it down to 10. Are they now cutting it further than that?
It's canceled. They're going to show those 10 episodes, and that's it.
And then that's it, which is really stupid.
It is really stupid. I mean, I can't even begin to say how, at least if you're going to do it, don't announce it before people have already watched them.
Well, they did the exact same thing when they announced that they'd cut the thing back from 12 to 10.
Yeah.
The show had...
Actually, I'm looking at it right now. It says, for those asking me about Swamp Thing cancellation, the real reason is because North Carolina promised a $40 million tax rebate that, due to a paperwork error, they were unable to deliver. That was roughly half the proposed budget of season one, which is estimated at $80 million.
Wow.
The Tea Party rules North Carolina and has been trying to destroy the film industry there for years. That's from Nancy Collins. I'll believe that without any hesitation.
Oh, interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Yep. There you go.
So there you have it.
Look at that. Three guys with beards just making news, even though this probably won't be up until next Wednesday.
So we'll sound like we're behind as usual.
That's all right. We started this thing talking about Walter Brennan and Russell Johnson, a.k.a. the professor.
Sometimes you just got to tell unpleasant truths.
All right. Hey, let's talk. Let's answer some of these questions. I'm going to go backwards because Bracken had a bunch.
Bracken.
So our friend John Goodrich asked, what was a comic that really changed your attitude towards comics?
Wow.
Want me to go first?
Sure.
The comic, I mean, I was always pretty much a collector, always read comics, always loved comics. But the comic that almost rewired my brain was The Saga of Swamp Thing, number 21. It was the anatomy lesson.
Yep. I think it was brilliant. Freaking out. Yeah, seriously. I think
it was like the second or third Alan Moore story. And I remember sitting on the bus coming home from Boston to Lynn and reading it and being so, I don't want to say shaken up, but it just like rejigged the thought process on my approach and my interpretation of what comics should be. I read it like three times on the bus, and it was just as effective every single time that I read it. And honestly, that changed my entire view of comics and what could be done in comics.
I can see that. Yeah.
Jim,
you know, I in the same era, dude, Kraven's Last Hunt.
Yeah,
that was so dark and so beautiful.
Yeah,
so completely unexpected.
Yeah,
Kraven's Last Hunt for me was one of the most sublime things ever done.
That's a great story.
Isn't it interesting that Chris was just talking about the Gargoyle miniseries written by DeMatteis?
Yeah.
Kraven's Last Hunt.
DeMatteis, when he's on, there ain't nobody better.
No, he was great.
Yeah. Well, again, I mean, there's a human depth to this Gargoyle miniseries. I don't think it's ever been collected.
No, I don't think so either.
So for those of you who haven't read it, you should track it down. You know, for me, I have two answers, because one of them is from the same era that you guys are talking about, and that would be, believe it or not, The Killing Joke.
Okay.
Oh, my God, yes.
And the reason I say that about The Killing Joke is because it, I was used to reading comics for fun.
Yeah.
And The Killing Joke actually gave me pause. You know what I mean? Like, it gave me, it's particularly the ending with Batman and the Joker laughing uncontrollably together.
Yeah.
I had to really stop and think. I felt sober in a way after reading that.
And isn't that interesting that my Swamp Thing and your Killing Joke by the same guy.
Yeah,
I was also going to point out The Watchmen. So, yeah, you know, props to Alan Moore. When the man is on, damn.
Yeah, in that era. And the other one I have to say, by the way, that changed my view of comics and what comics, my attitude about comics and what comics were for in so many ways is Terry Moore's Strangers in Paradise.
Okay.
Still my favorite modern comic. Had you told me prior to that I would want to read a comic that was basically just about the relationships of three young people trying to figure out their lives, I would have said that definitely is not a comic for me. And it became my favorite comic, my favorite modern comic. And again, it changed what I was thinking about as far as what comics were for, you know?
Yeah.
The other one that I have to give honorable mention to is Miracle Man.
Yes, also Alan Moore.
Right, when Alan Moore took over on that, I read the first few issues and was just going, that's out of the blue and that's just beautiful.
Yeah.
We have some silly questions today. Our friend Mary Elizabeth Iteralda, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, I probably never will pronounce it correctly, just says, why is purple?
So that Prince could exist.
Good answer, Jim. Tom, you can't beat that.
I can't beat nothing with that. That's just way, my brain hurts thinking about it.
And actually, that's okay, because the next question is from Nick Kaufman.
Okay.
Who says, my question is for Thomas Snegoski.
Uh-oh.
Is it difficult being both more talented and more handsome than Chris and Jim?
You know what? I feel bad for them. that they're not as talented and as handsome, but... You know, someone has to be it.
And really, we'll always have the height.
That's right. Well, listen, Tom is so handsome that it just, like, people don't even notice.
He doesn't need height.
No, people think I'm like 7'3".
Right. If you were actually that tall, we would never have a chance in the room.
Yeah. They think I'm a giant.
Do people ever confuse you with Phantom of the Paradise star Paul Williams?
No.
Uh,
he was also in the Planet of the Apes movies.
I love Paul Williams.
Wasn't he the son in Smokey and the Bandit?
One of the Smokey and the Bandits. Yes. But he also wrote all the music for the Muppet movies.
That's true. He's a brilliant songwriter.
Really?
Yeah.
And he plays a mean orangutan.
Yes. He was in battle for the Planet of the Apes.
Yes, sir, he was.
All right. Well, look, we have a more serious question, and I really like this one. Greg Bastianelli says, with the 75th anniversary of D-Day today, how about talking horror novels set during World War II, such as F. Paul Wilson's The Keep and McCammon's The Wolf's Hour? He says there must be others. I'm super excited about that question. I'm not sure how many more I'm going to be able to think of, but I love both of those books.
Yeah, I loved The Keep and The Wolf's Hour. Are fantastic.
Oh, brilliant, yeah.
The other one
A couple of stories set in that era with Jonathan Crowley, but they were just short stories.
Okay.
Our friend Michael Burke also mentions McCammon's Night Boat, which is another great...
Yep.
That was one of
World War II era, but...
That was one of his first books. Wasn't that one of his first books?
Yeah, one of his very early ones, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so it is interesting to say. I mean, the keep could have been set during any time period. It was just fun to kill Nazis, I think, for Paul. The Wolf's Hour, for those who don't know, if you haven't read The Keep and you like horror at all, of course, it's one of the books you must read.
Absolutely.
The Wolf's Hour is about an Allied secret agent who goes behind enemy lines in Germany, but he also happens to be a werewolf.
It's great.
It's really good.
and why nobody in Hollywood has ever picked up on that one?
Right.
Hollywood has missed the ball a lot with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's just like a total no-brainer. In the hands of somebody who knows what they're doing, that could be fantastic.
Well, the thing is, it could be a fantastic movie or TV series, but you could also do it on the cheap for a Sci-Fi Channel.
That's true, too.
You know what I mean? I agree. I'm saying I agree with you. There are a bunch of different ways to approach this thing, and it's a great idea. It's the plot is already written, you know. That's good stuff. I also think of Chelsea Quinn Yarbrough, one of her Saint Germain novels. I believe it's the one called Tempting Fate, is also set during World War II in Nazi Germany. That was pretty good. You know, the vampire story set.
Whereas my brain automatically goes to The Invaders with Baron Blood.
The comic book.
Well, the comic books, yeah.
Because I'm wrong in the head, dudes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, well, you're, yes, you are, but that's not why. Yeah. That's good stuff. That's all good
stuff. There have been some more recent movies that were done in that era, I think.
Well, there was Overlord.
Yep, that's the one I was thinking of.
That was fun.
Yeah, now you're talking movies. That's a whole other, you know.
Right. That's a yeah. Right.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and again, like then we get away from horror too, because there is so many. Well, the movie that comes into my mind is a movie that is very similar to McCammon's The Night Boat, which is it's not set during World War II, but it is about Nazi zombies.
Oh God! What is that?
It's called Shockwaves.
Shockwaves. Oh, that was great.
It stars Peter Cushing, and is it Brooke Adams? Is that her name?
I think so.
So Peter Cushing, Shockwaves, starring a submarine full of Nazi zombies. So look that up, folks.
And there's another one with George Kennedy.
Okay.
About like a haunted, it's almost like a concentration camp on the ocean. It's like a boat, like a cruise ship. I forget what the hell that was called.
I've never seen that.
Yeah, it's like it had a title like Night Boat. You know what I mean? It had one of those two word titles. I don't remember what it was, but George Kennedy was definitely in it.
Well, there's also. Again, there was a great episode of Angel that took place on a U-boat. There's also Tom, what was that? Below. Was that?
Below was good. Yeah,
I think that's just set on a submarine. This is a whole subset of horror stories set on submarines.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was terrific. So if you haven't seen that, Tom, are you thinking of Death Ship?
That's it. There's Death Ship, and then there's another one called Ghost Ship.
Okay.
But I think Death Ship is the one that I'm with, the one with George Kennedy, I think, is Death Ship.
Well, Death Ship has a whopping 1 star on Rotten Tomatoes.
Guys, leave us not forget, also in the comic book venue, The Start of Hellboy by Mignola.
Yeah,
of course. Of course. Yeah. Yeah, you can't.
Honorable mention must go to this because it's great.
My brain is not coming back to comics, but, you know, certainly. And, you know, there may be things coming up with the characters that Mike and I have done at Dark Horse that involve World War II, so we'll see. Spoilers. So yeah, good stuff. All right. Well, our friend Mike Burke says, "Why is Tom Snagoski afraid to test his comic book metal against mine?"
You know what? I am not afraid.
Oh, it here we go.
The opportunity hasn't presented itself.
We're throwing down now.
I think you need to go full tilt on this.
I'll even admit.
The proceeds from your next novel versus the proceeds from the next year of his comic store.
Oh, my.
Well, no, Jim, nobody's going to say yes to that.
No.
You know, just free comic books for a month if you win.
How about dinner?
You know what? I'll even admit, somebody put up a cover. It was a Captain America cover of a close-up of Cap's face, and he's got his shield like up over his face, and the Hulk's fist is pounding the shield.
Yeah.
And I could have sworn that the artist on the cover was Carmine Infantino, and he quickly corrected me and gave me the I think it was Bob Layton and somebody else. I don't remember who.
I'm pretty sure that I saw that, I had that issue, and it was Layton.
Yeah, it was Layton inked by somebody else. So he's already cleaned my clock once. That's where a certain level of confidence is coming from.
I see. So he's gotten cocky now.
He got very cocky on that one item.
So it isn't the question of you being afraid to test your knowledge of comic book trivia against Michael Burks. It's you not being afraid to lose.
Right. I'm not afraid to lose.
There you go. So Tom is not afraid, Mike, because he's not afraid to lose. Oh, man. All right. Another one for you, Tom. Paul McNamee says, I asked Tom this in person, but listeners might be interested. Tom, how do you and Tom McWeeny determine what parts of the Atomic Frenchie books will be comic panels and which will be the prose parts?
Oh, interesting. I remember him talking to him about this. What's funny is that in the first book, I think it was just a general conversation that we would go back and forth, and he would, you know, we'd talk about the moments that were going to happen in the book, and Tom had very specific ideas as to which stuff that he wanted to draw. So that was how that stuff was determined. And in the second book, Tom had a lot to do with the kind of mapping out of the plot. We had a very kind of a vague plot, but he seemed to have a more specific idea as to the kind of book that he wanted to do. So I kind of let him go. So I think in that particular instance, he sat down with like the whole book, you know, the whole book of what we had originally, kind of tweaked it and poked it and kind of turned it into a little bit more of as to what he was seeing the story would be. And that way he could have the moments that he was visualizing in his head, you know, oh, I got to have a giant, you know, souped up alien spaceship. Oh, I got to have an alien family. Oh, I got to have a scene where, you know, Kirby's using a bouncy house to get into the alien spacecraft.
That was my favorite part, by the way.
That was crazy with the bouncy house. Yeah, that's Tom totally came up with that one on his own.
And friends, when Tom Snagoski thinks something in your story is crazy, you know it's really off.
But yeah, it's definitely sitting down and talking about what do you want to draw, because you got to keep them, you got to keep the people interested. You know, you don't want them bored.
Well. We have really one last question, but it's going to take a little while for us to describe it or to go into it. And it's from Bracken McLeod, because I noticed, I said he had a bunch of questions, but most of them were really about how great Tom is. I think there's a love affair there, Jim. I think when Tom and Bracken and you are all on Three Guys with Beards together, as of 101, episode 101, it will be difficult for you to stand being in the same room with these two guys.
Well, Bracken's been known to fawn, let's be honest.
So Bracken says, why does Tom Snegoski write such good books? Why is Tom Snegoski so clever? Why is Tom Snegoski a destiny? But then he goes on to an actual question, asking our thoughts about Dark Phoenix. Of course, it hasn't come out yet. By the time this podcast is available to people, people will have seen it. Some right. will have seen it. And it also, he also said, any chance the X-Men franchise is going to ever be as good as First Class or Days of Future Past again? So go ahead.
You know what? I never could understand why you would attempt the Dark Phoenix thing again and basically do it almost the same way, which didn't work the first time. I mean,
I think the idea of killing off most of the characters just for fun is kind of stupid.
Right, but why do a story that took years to develop? I mean, we don't have any history with these characters yet, especially these characters being portrayed by these actors and actresses. So you've had like one movie with them, and then suddenly we're doing like the Ultimate X-Men. None of this stuff matters with these characters.
I can see your point on that. It's kind of like if the last Avengers movie had come out after Iron Man.
Exactly. Or like would DC fell flat on their face doing Justice League as quick as they did.
Roy right. Howdy, was that an abomination? Wait, did I say it loud? I'm very sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, seeing the trailers for Dark Phoenix, I thought, well, actually, particularly because I saw X-Men Apocalypse.
Oh, man.
And if you ever want to see Hollywood just setting money on fire.
That's the one.
That's the one. I mean, you know, yeah. people talk about that last Fantastic Four movie. I feel like at least the first half of, before that movie goes completely off the rails, I think the first half of that movie is actually really well executed.
Yeah, it is.
X-Men Apocalypse is a mess.
From the beginning to the end.
Yes, from opening frame to fade out at the end, it is a total mess. So watching the Dark Phoenix trailer, I was like, hey, this actually looks like it. Maybe it's not that bad. And I intend to see it. My daughter Lily's a huge Sophie Turner fan. So I intend to see it. But the Rotten Tomatoes score has me a little worried. But as far as what it means overall, you know, look, they had already sunk all the money into it. I'm really glad that Fox no longer controls the X-Men yeah. franchise and the Fantastic yeah. Four, because they've never done it right.
Nope.
And my hope is that what happened... Now, some of them are good. I mean, Bracken's not wrong. First Class was very good. Days of Future Past was very good. X2 was actually very good.
Yeah, X2 is still my favorite out of all of those.
Logan...
Logan was brilliant.
Is brilliant. Mm. But here's what I would say. That my hope is that Marvel... just completely scraps everything and starts small.
Yep.
Rather than introduce us to a world, or even if they introduce us to a world where all this stuff exists already, I think they've got to cast aside, you know, just like the, basically they need to take the Spider-Man Homecoming approach.
Yep.
Take the things we love the most, go back to simple.
Yep.
Introduce a handful of characters wherever you come in on the timeline, and it's got to take place in the present day.
Yep.
And guys, just for once, I'm thinking about Spider-Man and the Mysterio thing, and I'm loving it. On the third movie, could we not have five villains trying to kill Spider-Man simultaneously?
Sorry, Jim. I sincerely doubt that that's going to be the problem. I have a feeling...
The X-Men have the same problem. That's my point.
Yeah.
Please don't. Just give us one villain.
Well, it's okay if there are five. If there are six villains, if they're the Sinister Six, if it's one
plot. That's fair. Yeah.
You know, it's okay if you've got six villains if it's one plot.
Right. Fair enough.
As opposed to three different plots, you know. But the other thing that impacts this conversation is Josh Boone's New Mutants film.
Yeah.
Because, I'm interested in seeing what happens with that.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I mean, Josh Boone is a total fanboy who loves the comic book series and the characters, New Mutants, and loves horror novels and things. He's also a very talented writer and director. And I was really interested in seeing New Mutants. My curiosity is whether or not, because so they had kept postponing New Mutants because they needed a lot of reshoots. But they kept not doing the reshoots. And I wonder if at this point, because apparently they finally have greenlit the reshoots.
Yeah.
I wonder if they were waiting for the Disney acquisition to finalize before doing the reshoots so they could hold out the possibility of beginning the X-Men's presence in the MCU with the New Mutants.
Huh.
I could be completely wrong, but theoretically, if the movie's good, it could make a lot of sense.
An interesting theory, Darwin.
Yep. So there you go.
Hmm.
So that's my theory. It's only a theory, but, you know, it just does seem very strange to me that they kept postponing it so much that they wouldn't just, and they're insisting that it's going to come out in theaters. It's not going to just be shuffled off to Hulu or Disney streaming or something.
Right, right.
Which to me, if it was a remnant of the Fox era of X-Men, you'd want to get rid of it as quickly as possible so you could launch, you know, quote unquote, the good version.
Yeah.
So but, I find
make enough
curious.
To generate for the sales for making the next movie. What the hell? I'm on the edge.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. It's interesting. Anyway, what else is going on in your lives, gentlemen?
I'm working on a Predator novel. I'm working on a Seven Forges novel. What are you guys working on?
Tom?
I am working on some things for Albatross Comics. I'm doing some Goon stuff. I'm doing something else that hasn't been announced. I'm also working on another comic project that hasn't been announced. I got a lot of stuff that's not announced.
That's fair.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's amazing to me to see you behaving yourself, Tom.
What, not like?
Because you are the Mark Ruffalo or Tom Holland of our social circle. You are the guy who will blurt stuff out that you're not supposed to talk about. So I appreciate the fact that you're not talking about the several projects that you're working on in comics right now. You are doing a lot of comics right now.
I know. But it's very interesting to be kind of back in that playpen again. You know, for a while there, I didn't touch comics for a good couple of years just because I was working on books and stuff. And all of a sudden, things have kind of like come around where I had a lot of people say, "Hey, would you do this comic thing for me? Would you do?" And I just, it was nice to be invited back.
Amen.
I can think of five different companies that you're currently doing projects for that you can't talk about. Well, except you can talk about Albatross. Yeah. Albatross is one of them. Yeah.
Yeah, because the Goon stuff has already been solicited and stuff. So, yeah.
Crazy. I am simultaneously working on the Ben Walker TV series pilot script and the third Ben Walker novel, which is called Red Hands, which is very different from the first two. And again, it's weird to call them Ben Walker novels because Ben Walker is always one character amongst several. But he's the continuing character, so that's what we call them. And I'm working on some new stuff for Dark Horse that I can't talk about yet.
We got a lot of mystery.
Yeah. Well, that's right. We are men of mystery, if nothing else.
We are men of that, yes.
Well, Tom, why don't you take us out with Walter Brennan?
What do you want me to say?
Maybe thanks for listening to Three Guys.
Well, that's about it.
That's about it for us today. Well, we're going to go wandering off into the sunset and have myself some beans.
That was perfect. Thanks for listening to Three Guys with Beards, folks. We will be back next week. And you never know who you're going to get on this show. Maybe you'll see Walter Brennan again. Adios.
Gentlemen, have a spectacular day.
Take care.
There shall come a podcast like no other. Defenders Dialogue. Marvel Comics' original superhero non-team convenes once again. Comic book writers and authors Brian Keene and Christopher Golden take us back to the 70s and 80s as they discuss Marvel's most dynamic collection of superheroes, Defenders Dialogue with Brian Keene and Christopher Golden, Tuesdays exclusively on Project Entertainment Network.
My Favorite Story, a podcast author anthology featuring short fiction from the hosts of the Project Entertainment Network shows
Three Guys with Beards,
Jim Moore, Jonathan Mayberry, and Chris Golden,
Tom Clark from Necrocast, Igbon,
Brian Keene of The Horror Show, Chuck Buddha, and Armand Rosa Milia of The Mando Method,
Mary San Giovanni of Cosmic Shenanigans,
Jay Wilburn from Matters of Faith,
John Urban Sick of Ink Stains,
Biz Zung's Mr. Frank,
available on Kindle and in paperback and through the Project Entertainment Network store.
www.projectentertainmentnetwork.com.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.